Hello there, ball watchers. Welcome back to another installment of the show here. You're joined by Jake and Justin, and we are presented here at Ball Watching by Hoffman Brothers, our 2024 presenting sponsor. Justin, I am in the process of scheduling my summer spring tune-up for the AC. They're going to be over here very soon. We'll definitely have some content for that as part of my home protection plan. So for any of you all that need those nudges, need those reminders, and want to sit under this kind of umbrella of coverage, I can get into more of the details when I start mine and have this tune-up here. But I have that home protection plan from Hoffman Brothers. It gives me peace of mind. It lets them out to make sure that we do the tune-ups for, you know, my furnace, my AC, my HVAC every single year. And it's a great program to be in, and I cannot wait to use some of the benefits. So we will have some upcoming content here to put out on Hoffman Brothers. I cannot wait to just to feel like I'm getting into the summer before I just push this AC to the max as we get into the humidity.
Dude, I might need to call them. I know, like when we had our agreement with them, I didn't build in the home protection plan because I don't own a home. I'm kind of pissed now because I tried to flip my AC on the other night. I woke up and it was 76 in the middle of the night and I had it on 70. And I'm like, what is going on? I had like every fan blowing on me that I could. So I might need I might need to let you let. How about you just apply a little bit of your home protection plan to my home?
Yeah, we'll share. I'll share the password for the protection. All right, Justin. Well, we have a loaded agenda today, but we're going to try to keep this one shorter for you all. But I do want to get to the five-a-side, Justin, because you consider yourself, I'd say, a pretty big basketball watcher for the tournament. Yeah. I know you've been very into betting on it as well. So I have two questions for you and one just fun fact. But we're at the Final Four time, right? You know, we're recording this on a Wednesday, but we're heading to the Final Four this weekend. And I want to ask you, Justin, these are two that I think you should get. The first one is, what school has the most Final Four appearances for men's?
I'm just gonna go quick. I'm gonna say UNC. But that's for Yeah, I'll go with UNC. But
UNC, you are correct. Okay. 2017, they became the first program to reach 20 Final Fours. Five schools have made it to 10: Kansas, Duke, Kentucky, UCLA, and UNC.
So I also wonder if it depends on when they started the whole Final Four thing. Because what was it back in the 70s when John Wooden won his 10 straight with, they're not 10 straight, but 10 total with UCLA, something like that.
Are going back. My stats are going back to the 1950s, 40s as well. So okay. I think
that's what I was wondering, just because of the whole UCLA thing. All right. I'll take it.
All right, Justin, what is the lowest seed to make a Final Four? Not the team name, just the lowest seed.
14.
Is that your final answer?
Yeah.
That is incorrect. The lowest seed to make a Final Four is a number 11. And it's happening this year.
Happened. Was it George Mason?
Five teams have done it. LSU, 1986. George Mason, 2006. VCU, 2011. Shout out to the A-10. Loyola Chicago in 2018. So a fairly recent one there. And UCLA as well in 2021. So it's actually happened a lot frequently. But yeah, 11 seed.
That's three A-10 teams. George Mason, VCU, and Loyola Chicago now that Loyola wasn't at that point. But the George Mason one stuck out in my mind because that's really when I started to understand the whole Cinderella story thing. It's like we were 11 watching college basketball, and how is George Mason making this run? Shout out DJ Burns on North Carolina State, absolutely driving this team to the Final Four. That is going to be an electric matchup with him and Zach Edey on Saturday. It's going to be – I'm going to need to find a place to somehow watch that as well. I don't even know what time they tip off. I know it's going to – we have Battle Hawks. This is another – I'm just going to say it right now. This is another St. Louis eclipse. We have the Birds at home at 1:15, Battlehawks at 7 p.m. at home, City at home at 7:30, and the Blues are on the road that night. So I would say I need to somehow find like a TV or stream on my phone while I'm at all these games, but this is going to be a great matchup this weekend. The UConn game in Bama, it's just going to be high scoring. But Zach Edey and DJ Burns – DJ Burns has some nasty footwork. I think he could go to town on Zach Edey.
Yeah, it'll be exciting and cool to see NC State make it, you know, the sixth time an 11 seed has made it to this point. But the last thing I have here is a fun fact. So, Justin, the court, no matter where the Final Four is hosted, the hardwood court always comes from the same exact place. The final floors are developed by Connor Sports, who takes the hardwood sugar maple from northern Michigan, and the wood goes to Amasa, Michigan for the development of the floor panels, and then to Idaho Falls, Idaho to be finished. And then from there, they're shipped to wherever, whatever stadium or arena is going to hold the Final Four. The furthest they've ever had a floor travel from point A to point B is 2,552 miles to Atlanta in 2007 and 13. But did you know that all those floors are made by like one person and they're going from place to place and they ship them all every single year? So the final floors.
I did not know that. The only thing I'll say as a little bit of a downfall this year, hopefully they weren't the ones painting it. Did you see what happened in the women's tournament?
Yes.
They were off by a foot on one of the halves, and they had already played two games there. And it was right before the Texas-North Carolina State game, I believe, that they actually found that. And they were just like, well, we're going to have to play on it because we're not going to take the time to repaint these. And I just think that's ridiculous that no one even called that out sooner. But the women's tournament has been just as electric, Jake. Caitlin Clark, Paige Buckets going up against each other. I just found out that Caitlin Clark wasn't even recruited by UConn, so that's going to be like the rivalry game, similar to the UConn versus Alabama on the other side. With the when you look at South Carolina is playing, I'm forgetting who they're playing, but they're going to blow them out of the water by like 20. So women's side is just as exciting.
Hot takes here, Justin. Let's crack into the content that we have all for you today. We are going to cover off some quick news and then get in some honest reflections for the season so far, and then get into our FC Dallas preview, which is all that you want to hear. So let's get into it. No team of the week appearances for any City players this week. Chicho Arango won the player of the match day, which I'm sure we all love to hear. A little bit of salt in the wound for the St. Louis fans here. MLS power rankings, we plummeted down to 20 from being 12 the week prior. Kind of feel like that's a little bit fair. An injury front, still the same picture. We are closer, right, to Nilsson and Leuven's return. It sounds like Nilsson was working on his own yesterday and actually looking fairly mobile for having a broken rib. And Leuven still not there yet. I think we could expect to see him. I think Carnell mentioned in maybe a week or two. And by the way, that's see him. That's not full 90 ready to go jumping into the 11. So I think what I initially assessed when we heard about this injury is probably looking like it's going to be realistic. Maybe mid to late April, you see him get some minutes, and then hopefully he's fully back and humming in late April, May. So that's the outlook there. But Justin, let's get into the honest reflections part. We promised this on the recap, didn't get to it, but we just wanted to take an honest assessment of what's going on so far this season with this team. I know that they evaluate the team, Carnell has mentioned, in 6-game cycles. So I think we're going to do a little bit of a similar exercise here. So a couple things I want to point out, and we can talk about them. One, we just went from having this kind of positive spin on our slower start by calling ourselves undefeated, and we've turned this into now being winless in the last four, with our only win coming against New York City FC, who haven't been, you know, meeting the expectations they put on their own shoulders this year, following a pretty rough last year as well. My playing style, I'm looking at just some weaknesses for us, and these are not new. I would say our adaptability for when teams are throwing us a little bit of something different that we weren't expecting. But I think most importantly, and they worked on it in preseason, don't think that we've seen this translate yet, is defensive transitions. We defend so high that our fullbacks, when they're kind of on the heels of attackers, when they're beat or when we don't win the long ball, we've got very limited numbers back. And if teams want to, you know, direct attack us with speed and with precision, we are leaking goals. I mean, we're I think tied for second or in number two right now for the most goals conceded so far this year.
And we've had that problem last year, Jake. We talked about it, where you got to take that it's a difficult decision, but you got to take the man down, but not around our box or even within 30 yards of our box. You got it. When they do this transition, you cannot, when we're pressing that hard, it's likely because someone is a step late that's allowing another guy to get sprung through, or you need to take the ball and or man together and just take the foul, jog back, might get a little slap in the wrist or even a yellow card, but take it, because it's much better than having to have Roman Berkey be trying to make a last-ditch effort for us, because we cannot be reminded of him just having to make these incredible saves to keep us going. I'll say also in that, Jake, is, and you have this on here, zero control of the midfield. I don't think we've had, and I think a little bit of that is the Leuven injury. It's hard with a Durkin trying to get used to the system. Blum has had injury prone a little bit here or there, so we're just throwing Ostrock in there. I think we've had a lot of moving parts in front of him. When you look at it, Sam Adeniran and Klaus not starting every game together, AZ's been popping in and out of the middle, and I think that's a hard spot for him. So, but it's all together showing that we can just not play through the midfield right now. I think a lot of our goals are coming down the sidelines and getting whip balls in or shots from Sam Adeniran or doing set piece goals. But right now the midfield is just not working for us.
Yeah, and you already hit it on the head. Part of it's injuries. Part of it is, I think, a general lack of depth. So when someone goes down, when I say depth, yeah, we have bodies there, but are they a similar or at least a small step down level caliber as that next person. No one hits the heights of Leuven, which is just someone you can't replace in that lineup. But, you know, central midfield has been one that's been particularly hurt. And still, we could have been worse, right? Not having Durkin would have been, I think, a death wish for this team, especially in the midfield. And yeah, just the consistency, not seeing any of it in the starting 11, the rotation, the personnel. And some of that's not Carnell's fault. Some of it, I think, could be. And a lot of people are pinning our misfortunes on, you know, we should have signed another DP or we should have done this. And Lutz's interview didn't really help that narrative much. I think he was a little bit laissez-faire on the idea of signing a DP and kind of dismissed it. I don't think a DP signing solves our problems. Let me just say that. I think it could help, you know, us progress for sure. And I still would love to see that at some point, but I do not think that that is the reason why we're suffering. We don't even give service to our DPs as of right now. Klaus isn't getting much of anything. So I don't think that's the way we just wash our hands and say, we should have signed a DP. I think there are systemic problems that this team needs to work on.
Yeah. And unfortunately, I think this team does have great chemistry on and off the field, but it was a lot easier for us last year. And we looked at it and we started with our first 5 wins in a row and the guys are playing well. It's a lot easier to have good chemistry in that sense. Right now, we're not there. So I think it's just, we got to get through this rough patch. And I think these guys are still going to keep that same personality. There's no way that they're going to be chirping each other in the locker room. When you have guys like Roman Berkey, Celio Pompeo, AZ, Indy, when you throw these guys together in the locker room, that's just mold. And I think that's something that it's going to continue to grow, but it's been a struggle to start.
Yeah. Another fun factor, I think Roman Berkey has the worst save percentage in the league right now. And that is weird to think about because you think about how good he is, but it's because we have actually conceded a lot less shots on goal this season through this point than we did last season. But the shots that we're conceding are great chances. I mean, you can't do anything much about them. So I wanted to call out, let's go into this cycle really quick, Justin. You want to hit some of the stats you pulled in here too, but comparing this 6th game that we just finished to last year's first 6th game, night and day, man. We were 5-1-0. We had 15 goals for and 5 goals conceded last year at this time. We were 2-1 at home, 3-0 on the road. I mean, what a fantastic start. In 2024, this year, we are 1-1-4, 11 goals for, 11 goals against. So we've more than doubled our conceded goals in this same 6-game cycle. Obviously, different opponents and a different time, so you can't compare apples to apples there. But the home form hasn't been great, 2 draws, 1 win, and then away form, we've only managed to get, we're 0-1-2. So it's just not a great look away. But I do think the perfect, you know, potential potion for this could be FC Dallas coming home here. But Justin, before we move to that, anything else you want to mention about this?
Yeah. One thing when you mentioned that, I can't see the save percentage on the MLS website that I'm on right now, but I'm pretty sure Rome is the only goalkeeper with more goals against than saves. So we have 11 goals against and he only has 10 saves. If you look down the line, I don't think any of these other guys are lining up with that. So like you said, though, it's been tough. There haven't been a lot where we're like, oh, Roman should have had that one. A lot of these have been tidy finishes or guys that are wide open. So one thing I want to know, Jake, as we were talking about breaking this up into chunks or cycles, 6 games from last year to this year, we could very easily be where FC Dallas is right now. When you look at our first 6 games last year and this year, we scored first in 3 of the 6 of them. So it's like, all right, pretty even playing field there. I wanted to do a breakdown of minutes because it tells a very different story. Minutes that we have been winning in these games. So if you look at six games, times 90, 540 total minutes. We've only been winning 126 minutes so far this season compared to 187 last year. You're like, that's not that far off. 123 of those 126 came from 2 games of our 6 already. 56 from our only win so far this season versus New York City FC when Celia scored in the 34th, and then we won 2-0. And then 67 minutes came directly from this past weekend when Indy put away the goal in the 3rd minute. If you take away those 2 games, we have been winning for a total of 3 minutes in our other 4 games, which is just not something that we can consistently do throughout the season if we want to make the playoffs and do anything along this. I'd say we also have doubled the minutes that we've been losing from 76 to 150 this year, while the ties have remained very consistent, 277 minutes in 2023 to 264 this year. But the big one there, Jake, is in our other 4 games, we have only been leading for 3 minutes.
Yeah, it's shocking, but the spin zone, positive-wise, and that is this team is looking more resilient than they were last year. We're more comfortable when we are down, and we're able to get some sort of result there. So if we want to end on some sort of positive, I think that's a good one. The second positive is we're playing Dallas. this weekend. Dallas, last year, a little bit of a different story for us. We had that one awful delayed postponement game fixture where we lost 2-0 technically, but there was 0-0 going into that postponement. And then we went back to Dallas for 40 minutes and we lost 2-0 on two good direct goals from Dallas. And then at home, we were able to get them on our good side and get them a 2-1 dub, which was a great, you know, way to kind of right the ship. They had a really late, you know, kind of trash goal that Berkey spilled across. Otherwise, we were heading to a 2-0, you know, win, and a much deserved win as well. It was late August, August when we got this W. So it was a good kind of correction for us. And I think Dallas last year was much better than they are so far this year. So I'm feeling very good about coming into this with kind of needing a get right game.
Yeah, that last one, I mean, I don't even want to talk about the first one. We got fired up with Nate Lucas about the whole delay thing and then having to fly back down to Dallas just for 40 minutes of a game. That was ridiculous. But that second one, their goalkeeper got a red in the 12th minute. If you remember, the miscommunication, almost pressing him, and the defender's like, oh, are you going to come get it and clear it? And there was probably 10 yards outside the box, and Alm was about to take it, and the goalkeeper had to use his hand. So quick red for them in the 12th minutes. We were playing up for 88 minutes. If you think about anything, that would be an addition, maybe another 10 minutes at the end there. But now, we're moving forward into this year, Jake. So they do have a couple of guys incoming and outgoing. I'm going to take this first one because before I saw who you had as incoming and outgoing, I had him and their key players to watch as well. Pedar Musa. Dallas acquired him from the Portuguese powerhouse Benfica. If anybody watches Champions League, they're always flying around in there as well. It was a reported club record of 9.7 million that could rise to 13 million with add-ons. The Croatian international, he's had a couple caps for them as well for Croatia. He's a DP. He tallied 17 goals and 5 assists in 66 matches for Benfica. Yeah, it doesn't seem like that's a whole lot. That's because you're thinking about the level of playing that he is doing over there in the Champions League. He's still scoring 17 goals and 5 assists. What is that? That's the 22 goals and assists contribution in 66 matches. So every third game, he's providing a goal or an assist for a team that's playing in the Champions League. This guy is legit.
He is legit, and I think they thought when they were purchasing him that he's kind of that last puzzle piece to really augment Jesus Ferreira. But the other two incomings that we can talk about are Omar Gonzalez, who's a longtime vet of U.S. men's national team and sort of Mexico and MLS as well at center back, and Enes Sali, who arrived from Romania in top flight, and he's on a U22 initiative deal. He bolsters their winger attacker depth. Outgoing, they have parted ways with Jose Martinez, who was a veteran Spanish center back for them after three seasons. They moved on from Jader Obrion, who they will still see because Austin picked him up. We've already met him this year. And then Facundo Quiñon with Illarramendi, who we talked about last year on the preview, who has Real Madrid on his experience, his resume. They proved, I think, him to be expendable in midfield. So he played 70 or so matches for Dallas, is now gone. We talked about Dallas last year. This is the last time we will before we move on. They were seventh in the West. They did make the playoffs, but they lost to two-seed Seattle after pushing it to a third game. But they fell 1-0, and now we move to this year. This team has one win and four losses in a row.
And their only win was their opening game of the season. So now they literally have lost their last four games, like Jake said. They did not win a single game in March. So they have 3 points right now, a home record of 1-2-0, away of 0-2-0 when you think about win-loss draw. Goal differential -4. They've only scored 6 goals in their first 5 games and let up 10. Their key results, I know it's still very early on, but their season opener was 2-1 dub over San Jose, which we already talked about. Then they had 3 2-1 losses. So very similar, I would say. Not similar, but this is why I was saying that we could easily be in the same position as Dallas. We have 4 ties. And then but if you say a 2-1 loss for them, all those games are very close. They have 3 of those versus Montreal, at New York Rebels, at Austin. And then they also just recently had a loss, 3-1 loss versus Vancouver. But we could very easily be in a very similar situation.
Oh, absolutely. I think people that are doomsday in St. Louis right now, it absolutely could be worse. So I'm thankful for the results that we have been able to grind out so far. So players to watch, Justin. We have obviously Musa that you already touched on. I just think this guy is the one to watch. He's one of them that is healthy right now. We'll get into the key injuries. So I have no doubts he'll be leading the line for them. And he's got some really, really great quality. He's only been able to amass a goal and assist so far in the full 90s he's played in the past 4 games. But I'm telling you, he's dangerous. He is probably the biggest worry of mine heading into this match. the other guys, I'll have to say, I mean, you're talking about players you wouldn't normally talk about because they're in such an injury crisis right now. But Paul Ariola is a name you have to mention for them. I know he's in everyone's head from the time he spent with the national team for the U.S. and his experience. He's 29 now, you know, obviously not a huge guy, but he's got 50 caps and 10 goals for the U.S. men's national team. Now, you know, out of the picture, been phased out. This is his third season with Dallas, and I just saw a tweet from him a couple days ago after this, you know, grueling loss to Austin. They just gave Austin the first W of the season, and it's just, I think his comment was just not been good enough, Austin. I mean, Dallas fans, we're so sorry. So things are just not going right, and for him to be starting and getting as many minutes as he is right now and becoming one of the bigger focal points of their attack at this point, it's just not something they were expecting this season from him.
I saw that as well. His tweet was like a picture of him, like just almost looking defeated down in the corner and just like apologizing to the fans because he started all five games and played full 90s in all of them so far. You mentioned Peter Musa already. Croatian has six international appearances for Croatia. He's 6'2", 185. He's a big guy up front. Yes, he only has a goal and assist so far this season, but he's only played in their first four games, did not play in the season opener. Sebastian Legette, another U.S. men's national team guy, is one of the – I think this team, we talked about it last year, it's almost like a graveyard of U.S. men's national team players. And, like, it's like Jesus Ferreira can still score some goals, but with him being injured, a lot of these other guys are just, like, they've already hit their peak, and now they're still solid soccer players, but it's a lot of bigger names that are no longer as
And the one quick caveat there is it's kind of a retirement home for the senior U.S. men's national team guys, but also a birthplace of a lot of current ones because McKenney, Pepe are both from the FC Dallas Academy, and I'm missing plenty. They have pumped out prospects like it's been their job. So, I mean, they've historically been phenomenal at developing.
And were they the ones that drafted Bartlett, I think, as well? And then also they also drafted, I can't remember his name right now, came from SLU in like the first round a couple of years ago in the Patrick Schulte class. But I would say, yeah, it's a hotbed of guys that turn. And I would say this next one, Jake, I'm glad that you called him out. Bernard Kamungo. I want to talk about him real quick because I did some digging on him. 22-year-old from Tanzania. Thank God there was no – did you see the videos that there was after their earthquakes?
Yes.
Possibly we're going to have a tsunami. I don't think there's anything massive there, so thank God for them. 5'9", 150 pounds. Don't care about that much at all. His storyline is what's incredible. Lived in a mud hut refugee camp in Tanzania with his parents and five siblings without electricity or plumbing growing up. Once he was 11, he actually quit school to try to help his family meet their ends by selling clothes and to buy food for the family. He didn't have the heart to tell his parents that he was heading off somewhere else besides the classes, so he was hiding that from them. At the age of 14, he learned that the International Rescue Committee was bringing his family to the States, actually into a city, one of the suburbs of Dallas. In January of 21, him and his brother, Amani, pulled together $90 and had him do an entry fee for the FC Dallas tryout. A day later, after he impressed the coaches, he was signed. He had a call from North Texas Soccer Club, which is their MLS Next Pro, and he signed a deal with them. In 2021, he had 5 goals in 22 games played, started 11 of them. 2022, he had 16 goals in 24 games played. He frequently trained with FC Dallas and would actually even travel with them every now and then, and then signed a 4-year deal with them. So he actually became a U.S. citizen in May of 2022 and was called into the U.S. men's national team camp in January with AZ Patrick Schulte. And he ended up getting his first U.S. men's national team cap versus Slovenia this past January. He had 6 goals last season in just 495 minutes, has played in all 5 games so far this year, starting 3 of them, and has played just over 3 full 90s in total. It's just an incredible story, and it's one of those. I read a couple articles on it, and they couldn't stop mentioning the American dream. That is the American dream, but that is all driven by that guy's work ethic to be able to get there. He never thought that he was going to be like a professional soccer player. He just loved it. And then he just kept grinding until he got there.
Yeah, it is. It is the American dream epitomized through Kamungo. And there's a podcast of Taylor Twellman's Offside where they told that whole story with his brother, Imani. It's incredible. Encourage you all to listen to it and read about Kamungo. I'm sure we will see him. I'm not sure if starting yet, but we will probably see him feature. Who we will not see feature for Dallas? Jesus Ferreira, out injured until late April. Asier Illarramendi, their central midfielder, out until mid-April. Alan Velasco out until July, and Paxton Pomykal, who was once this big prospect for the U.S. pool, is now out for the season again. So they're missing some key players, and it's not good when you're already looking down the barrel of a tough, tough start to the season so far. So Nico Estevez has quite a job on his hands. He's, reminder, a Spanish manager. He's got coaching experience in the lower levels of Spain in La Liga, in an interim role with Valencia under Rafa Benitez, who's a legend of the coaching game and used to also work for Greg Berhalter as an assistant with the U.S. men's national team. He's been with Dallas now since December 21, and this guy's seat could not be hotter right now.
Yeah, it's a tough start for them. And I will say it's tough when you look about all those injuries. I mean, they have the names and the players. I think they need to get over that. But if he doesn't start performing here soon, we could see a midseason exit from him. But while he's still at the helm, what he likes to play is usually a 4-3-3 or a 3-4-3, but usually a 3-4-2-1. That's more out of necessity, like you said, with these injuries. I would say the style when you play with that is very compact. They are fluid with their short passes, quick passes, then also making sure that they are not allowed to get countered. No gaps for us for when we are trying to pick the ball from them. They're going to close you quickly. And that's one of the things that they've been trying to do. And I think it's kind of worked for them defensively, Jake. We talked about it. They already had 3-2-1 losses, a 2-1 dub, and a 3-1 loss. So not a whole lot of goals going through that. And I think it's because of how compact they've been, at least goals that they've been giving up.
Yeah, and they try to win the ball back high as well and use transition speed from their forwards. They usually have more options, but you know a guy like Musa is going to provide one of those options and hopefully a clinical finish as well. On the road so far this season, they have 2 losses, as you mentioned already, Justin. So obviously 0 points, -2 goal differential. Their strengths are coming from shots from free kicks and set pieces. They're also been a pretty resilient team as well, coming back from losing positions and defending set pieces. When you look at them as a whole so far this season, stats-wise, offensively, they have the number 8 XG in the league at 1.62 per 90, but they're only averaging 1.25 goals per game. So that puts them a little more average. They've scored a third of their goals on the last 15 of the first half and a third of their goals on the first 15 of the second half. So kind of on either side of halftime, look for them to be most dangerous. Shots-wise, bottom 10. They're not generating a whole lot of opportunities. They're above average, though, in their shots on target percentage. They're trying to get them on target when they do have them. Open play, second worst XG in the league right now. They're going to really rely on those set pieces where they can, and they are leading or at least tied for second now in set piece goals. I know we've had a couple of those as well, so we're up in the mix. So got to be set pieces have got to be flipped on for us all night.
Yeah, absolutely. And honestly, Jake, as we talk about their offense, I feel a little bit better going into this game. I know they're not a strong team, but I talk about how we could easily be in the same shoes as them. But with them being top 10 in short passes and bottom 5 in medium and long passes, that's one of those things where they're going to try to break us down and work through us. And that's not where I see us giving a whole lot of goals. It's usually the ones that are over the top, the quick restarts, the free kicks, and then also looking at ones that are like an up back through to slide guys in. And that's where I'd be scared of Jesus Ferreira, because that's honestly the goal that we gave up to them last year. But I'm not overly concerned with that, especially with them having 51.6% possession on the year, which is 11th in the MLS. Overall, I'm not really concerned with their offense. Their defense, not that concerned either. 2024 XGA of 1.42 is just above average, but they're averaging 2 goals against per game, which is the 4th worst in the MLS. 40% of those come in the 16th to 30th minute, and 30% comes right after a second half as well. So earlier on in the game, they're not, I would say, and it makes sense, as this team is trying to get points, they're probably starting to park the bus a little bit as you get into the 70th and on, and that's why we're not seeing them give up a lot of late goals. But it's definitely a chance for us to blow this open at City Park if we can get one in the first half.
Yeah, and open play-wise, they're allowing the 5th fewest shots in open play, but they're tied for the 3rd most goals against. In set pieces, they have the 7th best expected goals against. They're, like I said, defending set pieces pretty well right now. Goalkeeping-wise, not great. Bottom 5 in save percentage. But again, that doesn't always reflect the quality of the goalkeeper. But they also have 0 clean sheets. So they are yet to keep a team off the board so far this season. So what are the keys to the game, Justin, for me? I've already mentioned this is a get-right game. We've got to get after it. At the first whistle, this is a wounded animal, and we are a rabid dog. We are a predator. We need 3 points like we need the sun. We need these so, so badly, and we have to play like it. Don't waste time. Don't give them an inch. Make sure you go out and grab this game by the scruff of the neck. And I think for us, it's also a chance to work on some of our difficulties and weaknesses so far. You know, we're going to have some time with the ball. They'll possess as well, but they're not a very aggressive team in terms of pressing. So take your time on the ball. They're going to give us a little more time than other teams do. So build more versus just always lumping it long or hoping on a prayer. It's been really old recently.
Yeah, I think this is one that we could try to be a little bit more creative as we'll have a little bit more of the ball. When you think about guys, and we'll get into the starting 11, but Celio, AZ, Indy, can we do a little quick 1-2 touch, get them in, slot one into Klaus or Sam? I would say the one thing that I want to be weary on, Jake, and you have it here as well, set pieces. This is literally, we've been talking about this, like, oh, this should be a pretty easy game for us. Let's shut them down. They're not going to score through the run of play. They're going to try to play through us. That's not going to work. I could easily see us giving up like a set piece goal in like the 65th minute for them to tie it and be like, all right, here we go again. So that is one thing where once the ball is stopped for a set piece, we cannot turn off. If anything, the boys need to have even more of a heightened sense of awareness of what's going on. And let's not give up an easy goal. And let's help Rome out here. That's not a good stat for him to have, to where he has less saves than goals against. And that's not against him, as we mentioned. That's got to be a little bit more on our back line. And also not just the back line, but we're defending set pieces. Mr. Sam Adinran, Mr. Joao Claps, get up and win some headers and clear these balls out of here.
I'm with you, Justin. So what's your goal, Justin? If you're looking at this team, some of the keys of the game, obviously we need a good mentality. Obviously we've really been struggling to get points and to get good results. We need to get home, get comfortable, and really assert ourselves, I think, right away in this game. So my goal for us is to get up in the first 15. Get a goal in the first 15. Ideally, go into halftime with two on the board. If we're scoring two goals at home, we're not losing this game.
We talked about that. We'll get into the bets as how frequently we score two goals at home. But my goal specifically for this game, I originally had as a first half shutout to make sure that we get on them, because I think if we get to a first half shutout, we can really put these guys away, and I think we'd be leading by halftime. I'm going the full game shutout. This is something that we need to help Mr. Roman Berkey with. He deserves a shutout in this game. And like you already said, with a wounded team like this, we should not be giving up goals. So let's make that a goal for the team at City Park. Let's get a clean sheet out of these guys.
Love it. And now for the Hoffman Brothers starting 11. I just did a hot pivot on this one, Justin. You brought up Blum right before we started recording, and I just changed mine because I want to see something different for an 11 here. And I'm rolling with Berkey in the back. Do your over Markanic in this one. I don't think Markanic had his best game. I still think the competition's fully open, but I think Do your gets a go in this one. I'm taking Yarrow and Parker in the middle. Parker's still good to go. Yarrow's still good to go. Not ready on the Nilsson front yet. Totlan on the right. And then I'm going my 2-3-1 ahead of my back four. So I'm going Blum and Durkin to give you some coverage sitting in front of the back four. And then I'm going Celio, Ostrak, Alm. Indy has been fine. I think Indy, you can play in the central part of that three or on the right as well. But I want to see Ostrak get a run in an actual 10 beneath Klaus. So Klaus is my one up top there. So that is my, and also Alm is the other one to call out there. Alm hasn't started the match yet, you know, since he's come back from injury. I think he's ready. Throw him in there.
I'm good with your back line. I agree with you. That's why when we were making this doc, I'm like, no Blum. You're going to do Durkin next to Ostrak and maybe a Sam and Klaus up top. I like that we're switching it. I'm going Celio on the left. I'm going Ostrak in the middle, but I'm going to keep Indy there. I think Indy's the one that's been creating those chances. I think he deserves it with the goal going last game. I think he's going to get the next start, and I think we're going to keep Klaus up there. I'm going to go back to a Klaus goal for this game. I'll look at the odds and stuff as we get all through it, but I think this is going to be a good lineup. I like this. I would love to see an AZ spark plug off the bench. I think it would be a nice mind reset for him. Like, you're not starting. It gets lights a little fire underneath of him. And that's honestly when he did his best. That's when he started to grow for us last year, is coming off the bench for us. And that's when his stock really rose. And as we talk about stock, Jake, let's go into it. I know we've had a couple debates and we put some things out there for everybody as well. But what is the case for Sam Adinran? We turned down the $1 million offer. I forgot the European squad that even offered it to us, but you and I have been arguing back and forth via text. We've been putting a little bit out there on Twitter and Instagram. What is the case for Mr. Sam Adinran? What do you think that we talked about before this? What do you think Mr. Lutz would need to sell Mr. Sam Adinran around this time period? I know all the windows are closed, but say they were open. We turned down $1 million. What do you think he would need to take that?
Yep. So I'm going to run through my case for Sam Adinran, especially a little bit of an inflated, I would say, market value right now for him. So look at his last year, 8 goals, 1 assist in just under 1,000 minutes. When you look at his stats overall last year, he was in the likes of goals minus XG. So just basically overperforming your chances given to you. He was in the conversation with guys like Lucho Acosta. He was number 7 in the league last season in goals minus XG. So again, kind of overperforming. People forget also scored 4 goals and 1 assist for his stint in the USL Championship down in San Antonio. 2024 this season, in only 300 minutes so far, he has amassed 2 goals, 1 assist. I'd say he's basically on pace with last year's numbers, which I think were pretty good considering the sample size. And if you look at his, I'll just focus on the last 365 days, which is what I have up for you right now. His scouting report, when you use FBref, this is a guy that manufactures out of nothing. You know, we've talked about that before. He is in the 96th percentile in non-penalty goals. He's 0.69 per 90 right now. That's a great output. Look at his shots, assists, and expected assisted goals. He's in the high 60s to low 70s range as well. Progressive carries, we talk about how dangerous he is with the ball at his feet. He's in 93rd percentile. Successful carries, 82nd percentile. So you're looking at this, and you look at some similar players. You probably don't recognize many, if any, of these, but I've looked at their expected or kind of market value for them. Most of them are in like the million to 2 million range, a couple on the higher because they're younger than him. Sam, just a reminder, is 25, going to be 26 in September. My last thing I want to say, Justin, are two things. One, Nico comparison. I think they're on a similar trajectory right now, except Sam is older. Nico was worth 1 million heading into last season, had his career year, 10 goals, 1 assist, but he played over double the amount of minutes that Sam had, and Sam had almost the same stats. Sam is a ready-made player for most teams that are in very physical, competitive environments. I would say you're probably looking at like a Serie B or championship-level club that I think is going to come in for him. I know he did get the offer from Molde. So I think this is a guy that is market value right now is worth 1.5. I think we could see that honestly go up or down. I say up because goal scoring. If he keeps scoring goals, which he needs to for us, I think you can kind of charge a tax on goal scorers. He's ready now. He's physical. Everyone's going to be scared of this guy. He's a big specimen. You don't really get that very often for soccer. But the negative is that his contract expires into this year. So this is a decision they're going to have to make. I think we should have probably tied him down to a small extension at the end of last year just to retain some value. But his contract's up end of this season. So if we're going to move on him, it should have been a couple of weeks ago, or it needs to be in the summer, and you're likely losing a little bit of leverage at the negotiating table. So I think for me, my final thing is that for me, he's probably worth right now if I'm Lutz and I'm going to get an offer that I'm going to actually consider. Summer, you've lost a little bit of leverage. But I think you've got to be looking at 2, I'd say, is what I would accept for a Sam fee.
I just don't think he's worth that. I think that I know everybody's like, well, we just turned out 1 million. I think that's more of a need-based thing because we have no output from Klaus right now. You take away Sam and Dinner, and who are we expecting to really rely on to score some goals? I will say, yes, he has 2 goals so far this season, but one of those was that one that had no business even shooting, much less scoring, from an awful angle. And I'm going to talk about stats real quick, Jake, on what his value is worth. And May 19th, 2023, he's worth 200K. August 22nd, 2023, he jumped up to 600K. Now, how did that $400,000 increase happen? He was loaned out to the USL, scored 4 goals, 1 assist there. And then he had 5 goals and 5 full 90s for us. And we really needed him when Klaus was out. So I truly do think that was a deserving $400,000 increase. At the end of last season, December of 2023, they gave him another $250,000 increase from August to December. Now, why was that? I do think that one was also deserving. He had 3 goals and 6.5 full 90s, 0 assists again there. This is where I get really confused, and this is where I think he's inflated. And unfortunately, Jake, I realized that Transfer Market came out with their value of him after we turned the offer down. I think if they didn't know that, I think they would have held him at flat 1 mil. They jumped him to 1.5 mil in March of 2025. What happened between December 18th of 23 and March 25th, 2024? $650,000 increase on 2 goals and 5.2 full 90s and 1 assist. How are we getting a $650,000 increase on that output? I do think that when I look back at it, I was like, wow, he probably should have been ranked higher earlier, but it should not have jumped in that time period. You go back and look at what he did for Tacoma Defiance in San Antonio FC in 2021, 2022, and 2023. 65 games played, 54 starts, 51 full 90s. The man's got a motor. He's young. He had 27 goals and 4 assists. That means he's scoring just about every 2 full 90s with an assist every 13 90s. That's a separate conversation on its own. I just don't think that he should be worth 1.5 million on the market right now. And maybe they're saying that because we already turned down a mill, but I think that's out of necessity base. I think if we're in the spot that we were last year and we got that $1 million offer right now after being five wins, one loss, and zero draws, I think we would have absolutely took it for a mill. So I will say, I just don't think he's worth that right now. I'm very confused by our listeners going out here when you put, if you were a sporting director, who would you rather have in your team, Big Sam Adeniran or Nico? The vote was 112-36, taking Big Sam. Recency bias, Jake. Everybody take a step back, take a breather. If you told us right now, if you look at what a lot of our people are talking about, you talk about on the Facebook page, sell the team, blow up the team, give it another month. I don't think Sam's value is there, and I would much rather have Nico Giocchini on my team than Sam did. Let me take a quick back up real quick. I love Sam. I think that he has done incredible for us, and I'm not wishing him any bad luck. I only want him to continue to do better so that he can help us out and grow his own stock so that he has even a brighter future than what he already has. I just don't think personally right now he's worth $1.5 million. I think that's inflated based on us turning down an offer, almost out of necessity base, because I don't think he's actually worth that. I think he's worth more than that to us right now with how we're playing this season, and we don't have another striker that's putting away a lot of goals. I just don't think that his true skill level is worth the 1.5 that it's at right now. I think it's inflated on the $650,000 increase from December to March.
I think it's totally justified. You all can be the verdict on that. And honestly, we all need to hope that Justin is totally misplaced, because we're going to be looking for a good fee. I don't think we'll ever accept a deal until we have backup identified to take his position, because we're already without Nico and we haven't backfilled. And I think we're struggling with some of that right now. So we're going to have to bring in some other, you know, sort of attacker to be able to fill the void that he leaves. But I do think that this is someone that probably will leave in the summer if you want to maintain any sort of value and not let him walk. So you welcome me the judge. We'll be the judge on our predictions and Grahammer's. Justin, prediction for me, 3-0 W at City Park for City. I see yours, 2-0 W. I like where we're going here. A good clean sheet would fix a lot of things for us, or at least get some good momentum. Bets wise, we're the favorite heading into this one. -125, Dallas at +295, draw at +265, over under set at 2.5 at -140, and the under at +105. What's your bet of the week, Justin? What's your Grahammer?
So my bet of the week is always for us to go over the team total over 1.5 at home. That's hit 65% of the time in all the games that we've played. So I'd usually take that straight up. That's at -130. I usually hammer that anyways. I'm throwing that parlay with the money line to give me a +115. I think we're going to win this game. I don't know. I want to say, with both of us predicting for them to get a shutout, Jake, I would love for us to bet on that. But I'm pretty sure the odds are only like +165 that they don't score a goal. And I don't think that's worth it. Because I think we have had a little bit of a leaky defense. My kind of like underlying bet talked about the Equinox. Let's do the home money lines. City, Cardinals, and Battlehawks. The lines aren't out for City aren't out for Battlehawks and Birds. I'll post that later this week. And then I'm going to do another parlay and add the Blues on the road to hit it. I'm going to say the home, those three hitting is probably going to be like a +600. And then if you add in the Blues away, we're going to be like 12 or 13 to 1. So let's go St. Louis.
That's just donating money. But
no, it's not. The Birds versus Miami, the Battlehawks after losing a 64-yard field goal, and we are second highest projected team to win the Super Bowl of the UFL. And the Blues are kind of humming right now. Yeah, we lost 0-4. We just beat the Oilers at home. We need these points. We're only 3 points back on Vegas with, what, 7 games to go? We're going to get these dubs.
I like the optimism. I think I'm putting my actual bet in a +210 for this one, and that is going to be City -1.5. We both said that in our predictions, so I'm sticking by it, and I'm going to go City -1.5, so win by 2 is my bet for this one. So lock it in. The boys are going to be manufacturing, printing some money for you all this week. We'll put those bets out so you can ride with us. We're net positive this year.
We are net positive, and I will say we haven't got a chance. This has been a packed episode, but one, if you want to go watch some sports, the Birds are at 1:15 on Saturday. Get to the pitch. It's going to be a way nicer day than what it is on opening day when I'm going tomorrow. Battlehawks at 7 p.m. City across the street at 7:30. Blues are also on if you don't have tickets to go to either of those. Get to the pitch. Get some hot Irish coffees until we get into a little bit warmer spring weather. And then also buy some Soul Juice. Congrats to the Weiss. They just landed in Hawaii. and they're going to be selling Soul Jason of Hawaii, doing a big promotion cycle for that. If you can't get it at your Schnucks, Deerberg, Sam's, Costco, I don't know how you couldn't get there. You just need to go and go for a little drive. But if you don't want to leave your house, go to souljuice.com, use code BALLWATCHING for 20% off on your order of your Soul Juice.
Amen. Everyone, thank you for listening and tuning in today. Make sure you leave us a rating, a review. If you're listening on a podcast form or if you're listening on YouTube, make sure to like the show, make sure to subscribe to the show, and leave us your feedback. I know listener Jerry Hayes sent me a good DM on Twitter. Justin, she was the person that talked about the action analytics, and I totally misinterpreted what she was saying. And she actually loved what we're doing with Goal Vision. So we have someone that's listening, that's keeping us honest. So thank you, Jerry.
Jake, you're out here trying to lose listeners. Jerry, I'm so sorry because I got a little heated, but Jake didn't fill me in on what I didn't know what he was trying to say. I thought you were dissing us. But Jerry, thank you for listening. And we're going to keep that going. I think the goal vision that Jake's been doing has been great, taking a little video. So if you guys are listening to this in podcast form, on Sunday when we do the recap, go watch the YouTube version. We'll be breaking down the goals. There's going to be goals in this game, especially for City, and we're going to be breaking them down.
And I might try to do – we're not going to be able to make it to the game this weekend, unfortunately. I'm on dad watch. I know you're at the Battlehawks opener, Justin. I'm going to try and maybe do a little bit of Twitter Voices or Twitter Spaces, whatever it's called. I'm not with all the kids these days. So I might try and do it maybe some at halftime, little something at post game. So stay tuned for that. It'll be fun to try something out with you all and get some live takes from the listeners. So with that all said, thank you all for listening again today. We'll be back with you all for a recap on Sunday, but man, we need 3 points. So let's hope we can get those against Dallas and right this ship and get back on course. So all for City.
All for St. Louis.